Good evening. Tonight, I would like to speak a little bit about the power of the Chachamim throughout the generations, as we are living today in a generation that so many people, Jews and non-Jews, especially those who are not religious, have doubts, sometimes even big doubts, in the power of the Chachamim, their knowledge, and the most of the opinions of the people about the Chachamim, about the sages, about the rabbis, Chazal, those who design their opinion negatively against them, if you really start to speak to them, you'll be surprised that you see that their ignorance about the power of the Chachamim is tremendous. They just don't really know who they were. And sometimes it gets to a point that the people are comparing them to the Chachamim of this generation. And because the Chachamim of this generation are really by far below the level of the Chachamim in the time of the Mishnah, so it makes them fall into their mistake. They jump to conclusion. They think that, if we have the Chachamim in this generation today, that they are not sure about certain things, and they're contradicting one another, how can I rely on the Chachamim? And then they jump to conclusion and they make up their mind. And obviously, some of them just use it as excuse against the Oral Torah. Now, the truth is that those of you who know a little bit history should know one very important thing. Once you know that part, it will be a lot easier later to understand. Many people don't know that really the order of receiving the Torah was as follows. First, after the Exodus of Egypt, 7 weeks later, Moshe Rabbeinu brought the nation of Israel to Mount Sinai in a holiday of Shavuos, which is exactly 49 days after Pesach, after the Exodus of Egypt. And over there, he prepared them to receive the Torah. And as it described in Parashat Yitro, in the written Torah, Vayi b'yom ha'shlishi, b'yot ha'boker, in the third day, early in the morning, they saw fire and the earth was shaking, and there's a very powerful noise of shofar as it keeps becoming stronger and stronger, smoke, not a usual event. It's a substantial thing that the first and the last time in history such a thing happened. And then they saw the clouds over the mountain mixed with the fire and all the noise. And then for the first time and the last time in history, millions of people heard the voice of God speaking the first two commandments only. That's all right. We have to make order now. Once for all, we're going to make everybody aware of the way things were done, because I see there's a lot of confusion about this subject. So, after they heard, I'm the God that took you out of Egypt, then finally they knew about it before, because Moshe came to Egypt and told them that God sent him, and obviously they saw 1 year of miracles in Egypt, but that was the first time they really heard him, for the first time in history. Then he said the second commandment, you should not have any other God but me. There's no other God. Don't be confused. It's very important for your purpose of life to recognize that there's one and only, no two. And it's very simple. I mean, because if you have two gods, that means each one of them is limited. You understand? So there's only one. And he says many places in the Torah, it says there was no one before me and there will never be one after me. And everybody who asked this question, so if you say that there is a creation, there must be a creator, so who in that case created God? That's not a legitimate question, because those questions are applied only to something materialistic, material. Material, you see material, you know someone made it. When it comes to spiritual, it's above our understanding. We don't have an understanding how you create something spiritual. And it's enough for us to know that God writes in the Torah in many places, I am the only one, there was never other one, there's no one before me, and there will never be one after me. It's enough. Because you know, you're not dealing with a politician here, you're dealing with the source of honesty, the source of justice, and the superpower which we call Hashem, Elohim, and so forth. Now, after the second commandment, the nation of Israel started to lose control. Their soul left their body and they're about to die, all of them. And they started to say to Moshe, please stop it right away. We can't handle the greatness of this situation. Please, you go up to speak to this God, and everything is going to tell you, we're going to listen. Now, obviously, later Moshe went up to the mountain, and he brought 40 days later, even though there was a misunderstanding when exactly he's going to come down, they missed calculate by 6 hours, ki boshesh Moshe lavo. They made a mistake in their calculation, they thought he died. The Oral Torah told us that Satan made an image of Moshe that is dead in a mountain. By the time he came down with the first commandment, he saw they dancing around the golden calf. He broke the Ten Commandments. Then, all together, he was in a mountain, all together, 120 days all together. He went up the next day back to the mountain until Rosh Chodesh Elul. And in Rosh Chodesh Elul was the third period, which between Rosh Chodesh Elul and Yom Kippur, the 10th day of Tishrei, that's when he received the second commandments, and God told him that he forgive the nation of Israel for the sin, even though we're still suffering from that sin until today, each one of us. But the 40th day of the third period, that was Yom Kippur. And because Hashem told him, Salachti kidvarecha, he made that day as a day of forgiveness forever. And every year, the same day, it's a day of Yom Kippur. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain on Yom Kippur, and the Torah described that the next day he already set up a court, and he started to judge the people with every problem they had. Where was the written Torah until now, in these 120 days? There was no written Torah yet. The Torah that you have here in the Ark was not written yet. All Moshe brought down from the mountain was the Oral Torah and the Ten Commandments. At this moment, there's no written Torah yet. Most people, most Jews, even religious, are making this mistake. They think Moshe brought out the Torah. Ata oret al adat. Everybody came and kissed the Torah. No. He brought the second commandment and the entire Torah verbally. Now, when was the written Torah was given to the Jewish nation? Moments before Moshe died, 40 years later. There's an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, how exactly the written Torah was written. Was it written just before Moshe passed away? He said a month, 3 months before, a year before, and he started to write the Torah from A to Z. Because remember, he wrote 13 Torahs, not one. He wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. Even if you sit all day and write it today, it's still going to take you months to do it. 304,805 letters, and it's very, very slow to do it. So he wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. He gave one to each tribe before he died. And one was left in the Aron, in the Ark, as an original copy that everybody will ever have doubts will come and check if they made a mistake in their copies. That's one opinion. The other opinion is that Moshe did not complete the last few words of the Torah because it described his death. So Yehoshua finished it. So that means in that case that we have to say that Moshe wrote 13 Sifrei Torah, but they were missing one or two verses in the end, and then came Yehoshua and finished it, and they all copied the rest of it, and now we have the Torah, 13 different Torahs. The other opinion in the Gemara is that Moshe did not write it in one shot in the end. He was writing it in a period of that 40 years. As they walked in the desert from one place to the other, every once in a while God called him and told him, write another chapter, write another chapter. So basically Moshe was writing everything that happened until that moment. Because remember, the Torah has two important things in it. One category of the Torah, it's the mitzvot, the 613 mitzvot. And the other one is the history, the story. how the story was taking place in the right order with the names, with the descendants of each tribe and families, and where they went from one place to the other. The large portion of the Torah is describing history. Now, when Moshe came down, everybody in Israel already started to keep mitzvot right away. Once he brought down the Ten Commandments, he started to sit and teach Yoshua and the Skenim, and all the people who were in that generation started to learn from Moshe the 613 laws, and they started to teach to others verbally. Now remember, you didn't really need the written Torah. Because anyway, if you look in the written Torah, you're going to find that you cannot do one mitzvah from the written Torah. The written Torah only have the names of the 613 mitzvot. And in the end of the written Torah, there's a lot of Musar. Moshe was speaking to the conscience of the Jews. That was Sefer Dvarim, for instance, is Moshe Rabbeinu's will to the Jewish nation. Be careful, don't do, don't be ungrateful. God knows what you're going to do and you're going to get punished. Read Sefer Dvarim. So all these things really was additional information. The main thing was the Torah and the mitzvot, which means the oral Torah. And Moshe taught them all the oral laws, how to do it. With the written Torah alone, anyway, there's nothing you can do. It's not going to help you in any way. It's worthless without the oral Torah. It's no value. What's the point of having a book, not knowing how to keep one mitzvah? So everything, the main information was the oral book, the oral Torah, which only later became a book, the Mishnayot, by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. But we see here that for 40 years they kept all the laws and they knew everything, what needs to be done before they even had the written Torah. Shabbat, they knew all the laws, the 39 laws of Shabbat, what's allowed, what's not allowed, the punishment, everything. What is it like? I'll give an analogy. It will be easy for you to understand. Let's say a guy decided to become a doctor. He wants to become a doctor. So he decides to go to medical school. He learns a few years in medical school. He passed the exam. And when he's done, he gets a diploma. He gets a certificate that he's a doctor. And he gets one book or few books, which includes in it all the things he needs for his life, for his career. If you want to be a doctor, you need books. You have a lot of questions in life. You need to check. What do you do in this case? What fevers symbolize? All kinds of things. Skin disease. All kinds of symptoms in the body. Doctors need a lot to know. The more they learn, believe me, it helps them in their job. Knowledge is very important. That's one way that you become a doctor. Now, someone who went to school and he learns all the laws of medicine, plus he receives all the books when he graduates, can he become a doctor right away? The answer, of course not. Now, let's describe it a little bit differently. Let's say I decided to become a doctor, and my father is already a doctor in a famous hospital. He's a very good doctor. And I go every day with my father to work in hospital. I see how he operates on patients. I see how he sew the skin. I see how he cut organs in the body or replacement and transplant and all these things. I see how he describes what medicine they need to take. And I see the way he works in a hospital day by day for 1 or 2 or 3 years. I'm attached to my father from morning to night. And I saw everything he has in his office in the hospital. By now, I know just as good as he knows how to do what he does. Every patient who comes, whether he will take care of them or me, it will be the same thing. Now, if I would like to go to work in another hospital, will they accept me to become a doctor without a diploma, without a certificate? What would happen if I tell them, listen, but I know everything by heart. Nobody will talk to me. And they write. I still need the results of my diploma, my test, certificate to prove that I went and learned. So what do you need? You need to learn. That's one part. And you need to practice. The nation of Israel was like the second scenario that I just described. Before they received the book with all the instructions, Moshe already knew all the laws because God implant everything inside his brain. Torah say he was teaching him, was forgetting, he gave it to him as a gift. When he came down, he started to teach. Today, now we're going to learn about circumcision. Please come. We have a baby here that was just born 8 days ago. Therefore, we have an obligation to circumcise him. I want everybody to stand, all the elder people, you're the Rabbanim, the Chachamim. I want you to follow from A to Z what I'm doing. So what did they do? They took a feather. They started to write comments. First you do this, then you do that, then you use that, then you use this, and what? And then whenever they had an unusual situation, such when the baby was yellow, then they saw that Moshe said, God told me in case like this, it's a life risk. You don't touch him until the liver recuperate. So you wait. And then when he's done, and then what happened if a brother died and the second one died? You don't circumcise the third one. All these things they learned as they lived with Moshe for those 40 years. Then he decided, in 1 week from now it's going to be Passover. I want to come and teach you now how to slaughter the Korban HaPesach. So you have to prepare it 4 days, you have to check it. All these laws, he showed them, and the hundreds of people around him, they're learning how to do it. And they teach their students, and they teach everyone, and everyone knows how to do it. The best way to learn in life is practically. When you see what needs to be done, you learn. You want to become a mechanic, if you're going to go to school to learn how to change an engine, it's very nice. But when you're finally going to go to the garage and need to change your engine, I promise you, you'll mess up. You're not going to do it correctly. However, somebody from Puerto Rico that came, he hardly speaks 2 words in English. If he works 2 years in a garage, he will replace the engine better than you that he went to university to learn about engine. This is the nation of Israel. They already knew all the laws, everything. Why? If I see what my father does for the last 40 years, everything he does, I copy. Copy. So later, when we got the Torah, now, on top of the 613 laws that we already had for 40 years, now we have an entire thing combined. The written Torah with the story, the history, plus we have the secret of the creation of the world. Now we have, in the beginning of the Torah, how God told us the secret, how He created the world. In each day, what happened, all the things are included in one book. That doesn't mean that they didn't know it. When Moshe came down from the mountain, most likely already knew all these things God already told him verbally. And probably he told them all these things. But yet, when they received the Torah was written to pass it from generation to generation. And that's what we have today. So now, why do I tell you this introduction? Because first of all, we have a very important rule in Judaism. What is it? That we do not change from the customs that we have. If the things that we did for hundreds of years, we copy one from another, generation copy from the previous one, and so forth and so on. Whatever we do has to have a reason. I'll give you an example what I mean. Even if you go to the Goyim, the Americans, right? If you want to know how the Americans celebrate, for instance, they made up a holiday, it's called Christmas. So they have few rules. They buy a tree, they put beautiful lights, it's shining, they put gifts underneath. The guy with the cotton balls on his beard comes already with the red hat. And they've been doing it for hundreds of years. Now, I can swear that the Christians all over the world will do it next year exactly the same. I'm willing to swear on my life that they're going to do it in 50 years from now exactly the same. What, am I a prophet? How am I willing to risk my life? Very simple. 1 year, it's too short of a period of time to forget the rules. It's too close. What's 12 months? Before you realize the next Christmas comes already. So, if you told me that it's a holiday that you celebrate every 30 years, every 50 years, the generation already died, maybe all the people who knew how to do it already died, so those grandkids already never got a chance to see it really live. So now they have to just go by the history books and try to imagine how their grandparents used to do it. Yes, that's a problem. But the holidays in the Torah or the laws of the Torah were either daily, weekly, monthly, annually, once every 7 years, and one mitzvah of the Yovel once every 50 years, which has hardly anything to do, just to blow the shofar and all that, 7 weeks of Shemitah. So really, any mitzvah in the Torah, there was no way to forget. You just copy for what your parents or your neighbors or everyone around you are doing. You want to know how to bake matzah? You see what the neighbors, the cousins, the uncles, everyone does. You copy and you do it. Well, whether you have Torah, whether you don't have Torah, it doesn't really matter. However, the Torah itself gave a very, very strong power to the Chachamim. Right in the Torah, in Parashat Shoftim, it says, everything they tell you, you must listen to them. Based on this Torah. Do not move left and right from everything they told you. It's a serious warning in the Torah that you must listen to the Chachamim. The Chachamim, they decide life and death. They decide the rules. They decide to make certain decrees according to the level of the generation. I would like to give you a few examples what I mean. For instance, I want you to see what power God gave the Chachamim, such power that the Chachamim can literally interfere with the instructions of Torah, literally, with the integral Torah, interfere with that and change it according to their understanding based on the level of each generation and generation. It's very important to pay attention because you're probably not going to hear it anywhere else, but I'll just give you two or three or maybe four examples. I hope I remember all of them, but I'll just give you a few examples. For instance, the Torah says that if you own, in the old days, everybody used to own animals. They used to have axes. Axes, they used to use them to plow the ground, you know. There was no tractors like today. So almost everybody had an axe. At least one, sometimes 10, sometimes 100, depend. So once in a while, axes used to go nuts, become crazy. They run around, they hit people with the horns, they may hit other axes or cows or sheep, and sometimes they just go into someone's field and they ruin all the tomatoes, they step on it, or cucumbers, and they smash it with their legs. Or sometimes they just decide that they want to lay down and roll around on the floor and they messed up the entire garden. There were damages that the animals used to do. Now people usually they had shepherds. And the shepherds were in charge of the animals. And also they used to have a guard, like they lock them in. But sometimes you want to leave your axes by the lake 5-6 hours, let them drink and relax, because later you're going to need tomorrow to use them. Just out of nowhere, an axe that you have for 5 years decided to go nuts today, and it started to go and hit other axes. So comes the Torah and says, if your axe has any record, that means you could predict that it's dangerous to society. That means he hit other axes for 3 times at least. Then, because you are not a responsible human being, you know it's possible, and you still left them alone. If he's going to make a damage, you must pay the full damage. If he has no record, you have to pay half of the damage. Why? Really, the truth is that you didn't have to pay anything, but God compromised between you and the damagee. And he made, like, you're going to pay half, he's going to lose half, and that's the rule of the Torah, short term. But if he has a record, you must pay the full price. Now, the Torah says, the Gemara brings it, pasuk, like this, metav sadehu metav karmo yeshalem. The Chachamim in the Gemara argue which field God meant, the field of the damager or the field of the damagee, the one who got the damage. So the conclusion was that when you made a damage to somebody's property, you have to pay him according, that's what the Torah says, according to the best land that he has. So let's see, Reuven has few lots. One of them is the best, and the other is not so great. If you made a damage, You have to pay him based on his best lot. Because there's no way to evaluate the damage that your animal made, so you have to pay him with the best. But you evaluate the land of the person who received the damage. Came the Chachamim, and the Chachamim say, the people are not careful enough in this generation, we're changing the rule. Chachamim. God says it goes by the damagee. Came the Chachamim and say it goes by the damager. You have to evaluate your best lot, the one who makes the damage. If I have an ox and he made the damage, they go after my best lot, and based on that I have to pay him. This is just an example that the Chachamim made a rule. Even though the Torah say left, the Chachamim changed it to right according to God's power, authority. God gave them the authority to make those decrees. I give you another example. The Torah said that a male and a female not married cannot touch one another. It's against the laws of the Torah. If he wants to touch this woman, he has to marry her first, to give her kiddushin. Came the Chachamim, they say because the people are not careful, not only they're not allowed to touch one another, they're not allowed to be in closed places at all. It's called Yichud. You cannot go into the apartment when she's there alone. She cannot go into his office or into the door and close the door. There are rules about it. Who told the Chachamim to make those rules? They became a Nugad? The answer is yes. Who told them to do it? Hashem told them. Hashem put the Torah in the hand of the Chachamim. The Torah, it's like a raw material. It's like when you want to make a diamond, right? You get a big stone. It looks like a regular stone. It's not finished. You're going to design it. You want to make it round. You want to make it a square. It's in your hand. It's still going to be a diamond. But it's in the hand of the Chachamim what's going to come out according to their decision about the situation in a generation. There are many, many examples. Most of them really relates to money issues. When the Chachamim came and made decrees and laws, you can see it all in the Gemara and today in the Shulchan Aruch, even though in some places the Torah says the opposite. Now you may come and ask, how do we know for sure that this Chachamim had the substantial knowledge to interfere with God's decision? How do we know? Maybe some of them were not capable and they decided to do certain things that really God didn't want. So I decided today to bring you some of the things that this Chachamim used to do or to know. Some of the things you never heard before. It's about time you get to recognize the Chachamim. First of all, I want to tell you something. For instance, if one of these Chachamim will walk here on 108th Street and will open up his mouth for 1 hour, you're going to see him on CNN and all over the media. Because if you knew the power this Chachamim had, you don't see things like this in today in the world. Right away, everybody will be shocked. Some of them knew 70 languages. Some of them knew all the medicines. Some of them were able to do things that nobody today in the world can do. I'll give you some of the examples. I'll give you an example. For instance, Shmuel, that's one of the Amoraim, 16, 17, 1800 years ago, approximately. There's Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel used to learn together all the time. They had a lot of arguments in halacha. Shmuel, he knew how to make a medicine against constipation and make the person clean his stomach right away. He said that he knows the cure to every disease except one. That a person that ate bitter dates, there used to be dates that are not healthy, and if somebody ate them, he doesn't know how to cure him. But every other sickness, he knows the cure for it. People who used to have asthma, problems with breathing, he knew how to cure them. He knew that when a woman she's about to get her period, that one of the signs is that you have problems in her stomach, pain. Remember, he didn't go to Harvard or medical school, all this. This is, we're talking almost 1800 years ago. So he knew whenever that somebody say my wife has problems and this, and they say wait a few hours or a day or two, you're going to see this is probably she's getting her period, and he was right about it. He knew the cures for all kinds of ice problems, people who used to have problems with their eyes. One time if Rebbe came to him, that means he lived at least 1900 and change, almost 2000 years ago, because Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was close to 2000 years ago. So Rebbe that wrote the Mishnayot, he came to him and he had problems with his eyes. So he told him, I'm going to make you a special paste. You put it in the back of your head and you're going to sleep on it. By the time you wake up in the morning, you're going to be able to see clear. So that means this medicine will be absorbed in the scalp and go through the brain into the right place and cure the eyes. Do you know any doctor today in the world that can do such a thing? And he cured his eyes. Gemara says he cured his eyes, he was able to see. Then, people used to have skin problems. Their skin got dried and it started to get cuts in it. He knew how to make them a special paste that once they put it once, they get cured right away. Chicken pox that people used to get, he knew how to make a special paste. They put it on and it's they get cured. One time, they brought little water from the wounds of a woman. A woman that may shafir from her wounds, they brought water. And he says that this, they wanted to know how long is the pregnancy of this woman, how long she's pregnant. And he looked at the water and he said 41 days. What? There's a difference. Up to 40 days, there's no baby yet. It's just becoming a human being. After 41 days, it's already a human being. It's pulse, he's thinking, he has nerve system. And based on that, the husband got whipped, got beaten up by the Jewish court with a whip because he made a sin. Because he had a relation with his wife before her period and the pure days were over. Based on that water. So you understand what we're talking here? Scientific check. That means there was no doubt, because you cannot punish anybody in court unless if you know 100%. That's how reliable he was. Then, Rabbi Eliezer ben Orkanus, he said the whole water came from one ocean. And that's what the scientist said. If you remember, I said here last week, once after the flood, it's the continent started to shift to one left, one right, and we have now seven continents, but in the beginning it was all water and land, that's it. So they're all connected to one source, the ocean. Then Rabbi Meir knew if there is a placenta in a woman's womb, it must have a baby in it. And that means if they took out of a woman's body, let's see. They knew if they saw that a placenta came out of a woman, even though you cannot see the baby because the baby is smaller than a quarter, you cannot find him anywhere there. He knew as a scientific that if there will not be a baby, they will not have any placenta. I'm not a doctor, it's hard for me to imagine how it works. It's not him. That's the whole point. It's Hashem sending us this. Understand? Wouldn't be here, it would be somebody else. Then, he knew about the heavens, the skies. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, he knew that once you merge two seeds together, or two animals together, I'm not sure which one he's talking about, if it does not catch in the first 3 days, it will never catch ever again. Then, he knew, Rabbi Chiya knew that If a person wants the baby to have white skin, whiter than what it's supposed to be, will make the baby eat cheeks, and make her drink a lot of milk. That makes the skin of a baby wider. That's in Masechet Ketubot. Abaye knew that every impure fish doesn't have a spine. How do you know? You have more than 40,000 kind of fish. And he made a rule. He said every impure fish, you should know, doesn't have a spine. No bones, like we see. All the kosher fish you saw, and they serve in a bris here, they bring the, what's the name of it? Chubs. Those big chubs, the white fish. You see all the bones? So that's the spine that they have. So all the non-kosher fish doesn't have it. He knew that mushrooms grow from the air, not from the ground. Mushrooms does not absorb from the ground like all the other plants. That's why the bracha of mushrooms is not Borei Pri Adama, it's Shehakol Nehiya Bidvaro. Yes. He could tell always the difference between the noise that a donkey make and the sound of the donkey makes to compare to the sign of the horse, I guess when they're born. By not seeing them, he was able to tell right away which voice belongs to which one of them. He knew that the light of the sun cures. It's helping for medicine. He knew that the roots of the tree can maximum reach 16 amot, which is 24 feet wide to each direction, I believe. He knew to calculate the renewal of the sun every 28 years, exactly when the sun comes to the first place. You know, the sun was hung in the sky in a 4 day. Every 28 years, it comes to the same place exactly. So that means every 28 years, we have something that called Birkat HaChama. Every month, we have Birkat Levana. But Birkat HaChama, once every 28 years, it's like a celebration, you know. Rava, Abaye and Rava. So Rava knew how to tell the difference between 60 different kinds of blood. 60 different kinds of blood. Blood of Nida, blood of this, blood of a sickness. 60 different kinds of bloods. And based on the smell of the blood, he knew right away where this blood came from. You understand the power of a Chachamim? I'm just giving you some examples. This is all from the Talmud. If you want the sources, you come, I'll let you write the sources. Let's continue. The Chachamim in the Zohar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he wrote that the earth is round like a ball and turns around itself and is in movement and it has gravity, because it's written in the Zohar that there are people in the bottom of the ball. And when it's light in one side, there's dark in the other side. That's 2,000 years, actually 1,500 years before the Goyim started to realize it, before Columbus, before all these people. They knew that if what Louis Pasteur in France, about 100 and something years ago, he found to pasteurize milk, to heat the milk in 80 degrees Celsius to get rid of all the germs, the micro germs that has in, that they're inside, and to make this. In that case, when you do it, you keep it fresh longer. Because, for instance, all the grape juice that we drink, right? All this Kedem grape juice. Did you ever wonder how can it be 2 years on a shelf and it doesn't get spoiled? Take grapes, squeeze them in a mixer, come back to the... Put it in the refrigerator. Come back after 48 hours, they spoil. Open the jar, psh, like seltzer. But in those bottles, it stays for years. It can be on the shelf 100 years. It's not spoiled. How come? Once you kill the germs and you seal it, you heat it up, that's called cook wine. Cook grape juice, whatever. Pasteurize. Okay, now, so... Oh, also, there's one other thing that he invented, supposedly, is medicine against rabies. how to save people from a sick dog that bit them. Okay, so the Gemara says, this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, someone who was bitten by a sick dog, he got to take from his liver and inject to his body and save him. That's how, by the way, he found the idea to start investigating how to create a sick, a cure for that sickness. And then he invented the medicine against rabies. Also, Chazal knew how to do a cesarean surgery to deliver babies. There's a Mishnah, Ayotze Dofen. In Hebrew, the word Yotze Dofen means exceptional. Mm-hmm. When you hear an intelligent Israeli guy, he's going to use this word in almost in every other sentence. Yotze Dofen means an exceptional thing. Like in English they say, substantial, unique. Let's call Yotze Dofen. Why Yotze Dofen? What's the connection between unique and Yotze Dofen? Yotze Dofen means literally, it's exiting from the side. That's what it means, literally. But in Hebrew you use it for an exceptional. Why? Because once every hundreds of deliveries, it's a cesarean. So the Mishnah says, they were arguing about a baby that came out in a not natural way. So you see that they knew how to do it. They knew how to make a surgery and remove the wounds out of the animals, out of the cows and other animals. You understand? By making a surgery, remove it. That's in Sanhedrin, they spoke about it. They knew how to take the spleen. David HaMelech was the first one that we have sources that used to take the spleen out of his soldier's body. And because you take, nobody in the world today knows how to do it. If somebody will try to do it, a person will die. But they were able to take the splint out, and once they take the splint out, the person can run forever. Can run from here to Connecticut, and you don't get tired. So they knew how to do it. David HaMelech also was the first one that knew how to take a knife and make cuts in the feet of the people. He was a great podiatrist, by the way. And he knew how to make all kinds of cuts in the bottom of the feet and dismissed, cancel the nerve system in the bottom of the feet, which means you can walk on fire, you can walk on hot floor, you can walk on thorns, you can walk on glasses, you can bleed, you don't feel any pain. Why? Because you know how it is. In the middle of the war, if your shoes get ripped, what are you going to do? You're going to stop fighting? Huh? You don't have internet to order new shoes when you fight 3,000 years ago somewhere in the desert. So they used to do it to the soldiers. And if they needed to run barefoot, it would not affect them. You know anybody in the world can do it today? But they know how to do it, the Chachamim. They used to run on thorns, the soldiers. One sheep that the pipe that they have in their throat was damaged. They had an accident and something went in it. I was about to die. They made her a surgery and replaced it. Replaced the pipe. You know how complicated it is to replace a pipe? I doubt that if anybody can do it today. Well, they can fix it maybe today, but to replace it completely. And they used to know how to numb people, to put them to sleep fully, anesthesia, without charging $2,000 for the shot. It was good. Also, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was very heavy, heavyweight, and they put him to sleep, anesthesia, and they took, and they made him a surgery, what we call today liposuction. And they took two buckets of fat out of his body, and then they cut the skin, the extra skin, and sew it neatly, plastic surgery, and he became a model. The son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in Meron. That's the first liposuction, according to Jewish history. Then, what else we have here? Okay, they also knew that a woman can never become pregnant while she's standing up, only laying down. They knew one thing. How did they know all these things? Remember, they didn't have the knowledge today. They knew how to see internal parts, rentgen. You know what's rentgen? X-rays. Well, we have, soon I'm going to talk about that part a little bit longer. But there was a way to see things inside the body without cutting it. They were able to check animals in 18 different places inside the body before they cut them open. We'll talk about those things soon. They knew... Interesting. They knew that everything that you can carry on your shoulder... It's only, again, מסל שיכול אדם להרים לכתפו הוא שליש ממסל שאחר יוכל לשים על כתפו. What you can pick up from the ground, all the way from the ground and put it on your shoulder, it's a third, only a third, always a third of some what somebody else can pick up and put on your shoulder. So that means if you want to pick it up on yourself and put and bring it up to your shoulder and somebody else does it, the other person can do three times more. Of course, in average, that's the ratio. And I guess to bring it up to your own soldier, it's much harder than somebody else does it. They also knew that everything in the ocean that have scales must have fins. And they were right about it, because until now nobody ever found such a thing that have scales and doesn't have fins. They knew that... They knew to recognize more than 800 kinds of grasshoppers. How many we know? 2, 5? We know the French fries of the Yemenite people is grasshoppers, you know. The Jewish Yemenites, the kosher ones. It's kosher, you know. Not all of them. That's the problem now. You have to know which one is kosher and which one is not by looking at their stomach. They have signs. So they knew 800 different kinds, which one are kosher and which one is not.
You can't just recognize it. It has to be swarming grasshoppers.
Could be. They knew that everything that you have on the land, you also have in the oceans, except one thing. Who knows what?
They have something to breathe underwater, gills.
Except one thing. A rat, chulda. Everything you have on the earth, you have in the oceans. We do not have the ability to get to the bottom of the oceans, but they told us that secret.
Robert, I have a question. So yeah. You're saying there's humans underneath the water?
There's half and half. Half dolphin, mermaid, you heard? There's mermaids. Yes. Then... They have mermaids. They also knew all the birds picking up their mouth after they drink water. They pick up their mouth. Except the dove. The dove is the only one that drink without picking up the head. Sucking from the lake. You know how many thousands of kinds of chickens and birds you have? And they knew that dove is exceptional. It doesn't need to pick up the water and throw it inside the throat. It sucks like a straw from the leg directly. They knew that there are some kind of lice, we don't have it today, nobody ever found it today, that doesn't multiply with relation, male and female. They multiply by sucking the sweat and the dirt of the people's head, the scalp, and that's how they split and become 4 and 8 and 16. Interesting. Very interesting. That's why if we were able to detect a lice like this, if we kill it on Shabbat, it wouldn't be one of the 39 things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbat, because you know there are 39 restrictions. Any animal a person kills on Shabbat, is, if he does it not intentionally, it's chayav chatat. And if he did it intentionally, it's like lighting fire, same thing. stoning, karet. But if it was a lice, he only made a sin from the Rabbanan, because Rabbanan made a decree not to do it, but from the Torah was allowed. They also knew that fish, dag nachash, a snake, special snake in the ocean, and a pig, the older they get, the stronger they become. All the other animals, the older they get, they become weaker, like us. Except there's one rabbi, he had two students that carry him everywhere. For years, they're holding him from the hands. Everywhere they go, he goes like this, can hardly walk. They hold him. One time there was fire. Everybody was running out. And they say, Rabbi, let us pick you up. So he picked both of them up in the air and he started to run. We told him, for 40 years, we're walking you around. You walk like this. Now you started to walk like crazy. He said, I kept my strength when I'll be older. I didn't want to use it. Then they knew that the stomach of the pigs is identified to human stomach. Me'aim. The me'aim, not really a stomach. What do you call the me'aim? That looks like a long wire. Testament? Intestines of the pig is equal to intestines of a person. And then they knew that all the urine of the animals are not dangerous. Even if you touched it by mistake or something like that with your hand, it's not any danger except from a donkey. Donkey, it's poison. They also knew that every impure and non-kosher fish, he gives birth to eggs, and the other fish comes out of it. Mashritz, I should say. I'm sorry, the opposite. The opposite. Every impure fish, impure, not kosher, mashritz. Mashritz means they give birth to a living fish right away. He comes out and he begins to swim. But all the pure fish, all the kosher one, they give like eggs. First the egg comes out and then they come out. They also knew that every female in the world that is able to give birth is also able to breastfeed. No exceptional. They also knew that everyone who gives birth to eggs is also able to collect food for that. It's interesting. They all except the bat. Bat is the only one that doesn't. Every woman that conceived on a day, the baby will be born in a day. If she conceived at night, the baby will be born at night. They knew that a chicken give birth for the egg after 21 days. And also there's a tree called Ilan Luz. Also after 21 days, it's growing. Plumbing, what's the word for that? Not plumbing. Blooming. Wow. What happened to my head today? They also knew that a dog give birth after 50 days and the figs also bloom after 50 days. The cat after 52 days and the strawberry 52 days. Every animal has a fruit similar to it. A pig 60 days, an apple 60 days. A fox 6 months, the wheat 6 months. Behema daka, sheep and all these behemoth, 5 months. The gefen, the grapes, also 5 months. Behema gasa, the big animals, such cows and that, up to 12 months. Negdo adekel, there's a tree called dekel also. They also knew there's some things that are too complicated to even start. They also knew that from all the eggs in nature, the egg of the chicken is the easiest one to cook. Nothing is easier to cook. All the other ones need much longer time. And they knew all the signs of a dog that have rabies. That his saliva is dripping from his mouth. He walks crooked. His ears are down, his tail is down, and he walk on the side of the road, attached to the side. All the signs that the dogs have, that they where they seek, they recognize them right away. They knew in the materials what garbage, for instance, like when you make when you poke the olives, right? You have the seeds. So if you break the seeds and you put them around something hot, they keep it hot and make it even hotter, even though they themselves are not hot. Or if you put it in feathers, or if you bury it in the ground, or you put it around blankets. So they knew from all the materials which things are adding heat, which things are keeping the heat, and which things are making it slowly, slowly colder and colder. Because remember, they didn't have an oven or hot trays to keep the food hot. So you used to cook it on Friday and keep it hot for the next morning, for Shabbat. How they used to do it? They used to make sure that it's going to be buried in a certain way, that it's not only not going to get cold, sometimes it will be even hotter, like it's on a fire. Even though there was no fire. Remember, you cannot add pieces of wood to the fire. So, this is just, you know, skipping a lot of the things. The list is about triple than what I just read to you. There's a lot of interesting things here. But I just wanted to bring a few of them. Now I want to talk about what I told you before. Rentgen, the X-rays, right? Today, everybody thinking in today's that Wilhelm Conrad Rentgen, the German scientist, he is the one who recognized the waves of the Rentgen in an experiment that he made, and he called them the X-ray? No, what's the word for that? For like X what?
Rays,
that's the name of it. Ah, that's why it's called X-ray. Okay, here I learned something. It's hot here or what? It's hot today. Today was a record for 66 and one. So anyway, when did he do it? In 1895. 113 years ago. But after the nation of Israel came out of Egypt, the Torah told us that when they walked in the desert, this is what the Torah says, V'Hashem olech lifneim yomam be'amud anan, and Hashem is walking in front of them day with a pillar of cloud, lanchotam haderech, to show them the way, Velaila, and at night with a fire to light the way to them. V'ine b'braita, when we go to the Mishnayot, it's in a braita of Melechet HaMishkan that describes how they used to build the temporary Bet HaMikdash. It says that not only the clouds were making the way straight for them, that they're able to walk straight all the time, that they were using this special cloud to see what's inside every item, buckets, ceramic, barrels, and they were able to see inside. So I am istakel betafiach. Tafiach means kad, a barrel or a bucket. Ve'odeh ma betocho, and he doesn't have to open the seal because everything was sealed. They don't need to keep opening the seal. By looking through the cloud, you see clear inside what's in each item. They knew right away. Exactly like the Rentgen, like the X-ray, ultrasound, CT, MRI, that we know today so well. The pictures here are very nice. So, for instance, the red cow, right? We have a mitzvah of a red cow, which, by the way, indicates without a doubt that the Torah is divine. Because I once told you, if you remember, for those who did not hear it before, there are two hairs in the neck of the cow, that once you put any weight on that red cow, those two hairs fall down and they never rise ever again. And also, once you put weight on the red cow, the eyes become cross-eyed. So there are two signs that show if this cow was used or not, because the Torah say you gotta get it with nobody ever used it. If they used it, right away it's become obsolete, worthless. You know, the Gemara says there was a goy that one time he had a red cow, and he knew it's something special, so he started to ask around, and somebody, another goy, told him, sell it to the Jews. The Jews will pay you good money for it. So he went to the Jews, and the Jews said, oh, you really have red cow? Can we come see it? They can. They saw it. They saw it's kosher red cow. No black hairs, nothing. It's all red. So they told him, okay, we'll give you 4 coins of gold, which was already much higher, I guess, than what a cow worth. So in the beginning, he agreed. By the time they went to bring the money, he asked around. They told him, you're fool. You're going to sell this cow for 4 coins, they'll pay you much more. So they came and said 6. So, okay, we'll pay you 6. 10. Okay, we'll pay you 10. Started to play with them. 20. Say, no, I'm not selling. Businessman. Maybe he thought he's in 47th Street. I don't know what got into him. But anyway, finally they came all the way up to 1,000 coins of gold. 1,000 coins of gold. And they say, is it a done deal? Yes, let's shake hands on it. You're not going to change your mind? No. 1,000 coins of gold, it's enough. Say, okay, let us go bring the money. They went and said, tomorrow we'll come back with few bags full of coins of gold. By the next day they came back. Now he went to his friend, to his neighbor. He said, I'm going to fool these Jews big time. You really think I'm going to give them a cow like they want? I know, I heard around that the only condition that they're going to buy this cow if nobody ever sat on it. Come with me, we'll hide the cow in the back, we'll put a bag of wheat on the back of it all night. By the morning early, I'll take it off. When they come, we'll give it to them. I'm going to take 1,000 coins of gold, and we'll give them a cow that's worth 1 coin of gold. So, and the Jews came back, they bought the bag and said, ah, not that fast, don't touch the money. First, the merchandise. He brings the cow out. The rabbi pulls out a magnified glass. He comes like this, like the check, the etrogim, you know? He comes to the neck of the cow. He got up. He said, look at the eyes of the cow. He said, the deal is off. No deal. So what happened? This is the word of the Gemara. Go make fun at your mother, the rabbi told him. The Gemara says, go make fun at your mother. So he said, what? He said, what do you think, you're fooling us? Yesterday was kosher, what did you do to it? By the time we got, you put something on it. So how did you know? He said, the God who gave us this mitzvah also told us how to get protected from fools like you. So the deal is off. So the Gemara says he went back into his house and he say, bless, he is the one who chose this nation. And he took a rope, he tied himself, and he hung himself to death. That's what happened. So not only did he not get 1,000 coins of gold, he went straight to hell. So the point, why I'm telling you this story, this is just one of thousands of examples. No human being was able ever to know what to look for. If it's not a divine book, who would ever tell us where to look? An average cow have hundreds of or millions of hairs. You know, it's a big thing. We have more than a million hair in our head. Not all of us, but that's okay. Anyway, today it's in fashion. Even those who have hair, they shave their head. But anyway, so they have millions of hairs, millions. How do you know to look for two and they're right here by the neck? First of all, who gave you the idea there's two exceptional hairs? And second, how would you know where they are? And third, how would you know that it's affecting the eyes if you put something on the back of this red cow? It's divine information, 100%. By the way, you know that there was nine red cows in history, 9. We're expecting the last one. It should be 10. One last one we are waiting for. Even though somebody told me that there's a rumor that there is a family that keeping the ashes of the red cow from the time of before Beit HaMikdash and passing it from father to son, generations, in a jar. Because, you know, once you add more water to it, for instance, if you have a nice swimming pool here in your backyard, and you want all the Kohanim to become pure, you take this jar, if supposedly it's true, you spill it into the swimming pool, everything becomes holy water. You take from this water, you splashed on the Kohanim, they become pure. So let's go back to what we said. This is, they have a picture here of a red cow, how it looks. It's interesting. It's anyway, so why did I get to red cow? Because the X-ray, today if you make an X-ray to a red cow, you know if the cow is kosher from inside. But they didn't want to operate on a cow to know if it's kosher from inside. So how did they know? This is how they used to check. It brings here, like this. So they did like this. They need to check in 18 different places. And the way that they did it is by putting the cow right next to the cloud. And once the cow goes next to the cloud, you begin to see the inside of the cow. And you see if it's complete inside, there's no holes in the lung, all these things that you need to check, thanks to that cloud. By the way, there was one red cow that was born in Texas in 1998. Did you know that? What was the name of it? You're not going to believe it. The Goyim knew how to call it. Huh? Barack Obama. No. Geula. Speaking about Obama. What's her name? Clinton, the daughter. What's her name? Chelsea Clinton went to Iraq to meet the soldiers. So one general was standing, a tough guy. So she came to him and said, "Excuse me, when you go to war, are you fear from anything?" He said, "I'll tell you the truth. There are only three things that I'm afraid of." She told him, "What are they?" He said, "First, Osama. Second, Obama. Third, your mama." Next thing the Torah says, that when they receive the Torah says, "V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot." Not shom'im et ha'kolot, not listening to the voice of God, seeing the voice of God. What does it mean? Every voice that is made have radio waves, waves all over. Now you know, the faster the frequency is, it gives pictures. Did you know that? It gives all kinds of shapes, beautiful shapes. So today they have a special technology to detect radio waves. We cannot see it with the five senses that we have. We cannot detect radio waves, but we all know that they exist. Even before we had machinery to check it, we knew. You turn the radio on, you hear somebody from LA, you know there are some kind of waves in the air. But today they have special technology, so they're showing you short waves, long waves, the way they look. It's interesting. So in a time, the Chazal says to us that the nation of Israel, they saw all these electrical radio waves in the air, and the Mechilta, that was written 1600 years ago, explained this pasuk, "V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot," that they see images in the air of the voices that God made when He spoke the first two commandments, "Ro'im et ha'kolot." So it shows the machinery here, and there, some of the pictures here are beautiful, all kinds of nice colors that they're showing. Okay, now, what about hair? The hair around us. Does hair has any weight? The hair in a space, right? Does hair have any weight? Can you weigh hair and tell how much is weight? Until the 17th century, 300 years ago, if you ask this question, people would mark you as a fool. Air has weight. What air? What weight? Everybody knew air is empty. No weight, no massa, no size, no nothing. Until Galileo Galilei came. Galileo Galilei was actually 400 years ago. So that should be until 400 years ago in the time of Galileo. He started to prove that air has some kind of weight. Today, we all know that the air around the air around the earth, around our world that surrounding us, what's the weight of it? Who knows? 14 pounds? 5.1 ton multiply by 10 in the power of 15. That's the formula. 10 to the power of 15 times 5.1 ton. Yeah, around the earth completely. I don't know how they measure it. Don't ask me. I didn't go to Harvard. You know? And the pressure of the air around the earth on each one of us is how much? How much pressure we have on each human being, weight of air? Who knows? Huh? I swear, I guarantee you that I won't get an answer from you. And I tell you why. You know why? Because when the basket goes around and you need to take out the money, the mind stops thinking. So let's wait until you finish with the charity portion. 5,000 pounds? Yeah. You gotta come earlier to know the number, Mishael. No. What do you say? 10 ton. That's the pressure on each one of us. So how come we're not getting smashed? Huh? There is a system in our body that create an opposite pressure equal to this pressure of the air, that we won't get smashed. Water? Not water. An opposite pressure. That's why we don't feel that weight of the air. Now, cold air. It's colder, it's heavier or lighter from hot air? It's crowded. It's more crowded, therefore it's heavier. So when the air becoming colder, and when it's becoming hotter, when you warm it, automatically it catch more size. And what happened to it? It brings it up. And that's what we say, it rise, right? Now I want to tell you something. Did you ever think, I don't know if you ever saw, but in one of my lectures, I think a week or two ago, you can watch it on a website. Even though it's in Hebrew, you can just see a movie that I showed them, 5 minutes movie, about the astronauts on NASA in the spaceship, how their life is. I have it in my computer. They fly in the air, you know. So one push the other. Let's say I want to send Malkiel from here to Muncie now. So what do? I make him lay in the air. I push his feet like this. Fly all the way to my house in Muncie. Then somebody over there will give him a push back. He comes all the way back here in the air like this. Like you're swimming inside the air. Now let's say you want to pick up this whole building. If you take a building like this size, you can move it with your pinky toe. You can push it like this. This whole building, you push it, it's gonna fly forever. Oh, that's the easy part. Now, what happens when you want to go to the bathroom? You ever think about that part? There's no gravity. So first of all, when you sit in a bathroom, what happened right away? You fly to the ceiling. So you gotta make sure somebody will be above the ceiling pushing your head down to the toilet. Then you're shooting stars. If you ever see some lines above you, you know there's the astronauts just passed by over there with their bathroom. That's very hard. Did you ever think about it? How did they go to the bathroom?
But I have a harder question. I have a harder question. How do you swallow the food?
That's muscular. That's no problem. That's internally. The body can...
How it goes inside? Once it goes into the system, then maybe it absorbs and pull it down. But before, but let's say you want to put something, all right? It goes into the pipe. It's right here. But the gravity makes it fall down. No?
It's contraction.
Contraction? So it's not going to come right back up. So if you drink vodka, it won't go back to your father-in-law over there. When you go to the Shidduch, the Bukhari, and they give you a bottle of vodka, you drink, it comes out of your nose. You're lucky you're not in space. You want to get a Shidduch. So anyway, what they do, they tie themselves with a seatbelt to the toilet, and they have a special system that suck it inside. Otherwise, they can go to the bathroom. It's very interesting how Hashem made this world with gravity, that everything you need is standing, nothing is flying around. It's beautiful. The only place that people can live is right here. Every other star around us, it's either 300-400 degrees above the zero or hundreds of degrees below zero. Right? So, you know, as soon as you get there, once you come out, there's nothing to come back in. You either become ice, right? Or you become ashes, one of the two. So, the Malbim writes, the Malbim writes like this. First of all, there is a pasuk in the Torah, La'asot la'ruach mishkal u'mayim tiken b'mida. So the Malbim writes, the Malbim was 130 years ago. Malbim, one of the most interesting commentators on the Torah, the Malbim. Mamash interesting. You read the Malbim, you won't believe he only lived 130 years ago. Mamash sounds like Rashi. That's how great he is. So he wrote, La'asot la'ruach mishkal, she'yesod ha'avir, the air, has weight. And that he translated a pasuk that is 2,000 years old, more than 2,000 years old, way before Galileo discovered that the air has some weight. And he says, and therefore the steam goes up to the clouds, and the lower air, it's heavier than the upper one. Asher mishkavo kaved min ha'edim akalim. And the light steam or clouds go higher. And that's how the water goes up, and later you're getting rain, and it's all like a cycle. How is it? Because of the weight of the air. Without the air weight, you wouldn't be able to get rain, you wouldn't be able to get clouds, you wouldn't be able to have this system. And one other thing is like this. You know that everything in nature, when you heat it up, it expands. And when you're freezing it, when you're cooling it, it automatically shrinks. Therefore, when you heat up water, right, what happened to the water? It become eventually steam, and it all disappeared, evaporates. What happened when the water begin to freeze? When they become colder and colder and colder? They begin to shrink. Once they get to a temperature of 4 degrees Celsius, very close to freezing, it's like 37, 38 in America, something like that. Once it gets to that temperature, there is a miracle that happening automatically. The water changed to the other side, and now from this moment on, they begin to expand instead of shrinking. Why? Very simple. The water continues to shrink until they get to zero, and lower and lower and lower. You know what would happen in the oceans? All the top layers of the oceans will become ice, one piece of ice,
and they go down, they sink down into the bottom of the ocean. An hour later, the top layer become ice and it sink down. And then the top layer and it sink down and so forth and so on until the oceans all become one solid piece of ice. No fish, nothing to get from the oceans, no water, no life, no nothing. So the only way that we can live here is to take the water and interfere with nature. And tell the water, once you get to almost to zero, you cannot shrink anymore. Because I want the people to live. You turn to the other side. No other material behaves in such a weird way. But that's the only way we can have life. And the scientist says that there's no doubt that there is a creator to the world. How do they know? A lot of them that are honest enough. Because the electrons around the atom, right? Even if you interfere with that, you cut it, you mix it up, they always come back to the same root. They always come back to where they're supposed to go and they move in the same shape, always. You interfere, you move it, it goes back. He knows he must go back like soldiers. Like a bunch of dancers, you know, they have to go, they go. So if you mix, you push one of them right away, she runs back into the line, she runs. That's how it is. The material, the raw material. I told you that material, it's all illusion. Everything you see, it's not really taking any space. It's all an illusion. This whole world, you can fit it in one little gum. The whole world. Why? The reason you see it so wide and nice is because it moves so fast, it gives you an illusion that it exists. It doesn't really exist. Once you take the energy of Hashem from any material, right away it shrinks to zero. Even the body, nothing. The body that we have, the way you see it, it's big, wide, you see jackets, you see things, it's all an illusion. It's not really exist. I told you, I gave you the example of the fan. The fan, when it turns very fast, it looks like a round thing, right? It's not, but it's only four things. Why it looks like a whole circle, like a whole wheel? Because it turns around so fast that it looks like you have a complete full circle. Full. Why? It's an illusion. Same thing the atoms. They move, the electrons move so fast that it looks like everything you see. You cut it, it continue to move. But it's really nothing. It's interesting. And the weight and the gravity and all these things, the more you learn about those things, the more you impress from the brilliance of the Creator. And you know what's the best part? There are places in the Torah that he say, I did everything for you, the nation of Israel. And you know what's the worst part? That the nation of Israel, some of them is busy with nonsense. With nonsense. Nonsense. Money, work, library, movies, basketball, television, internet, everything but the important thing. So now, the situation in this country, whether we want it or not, will force us to become closer to Hashem. You know why? Because when the problem begins, people become more religious. History always shows that when people become poor, they become more religious. They become wealthier, they become less religious. Now everybody will become poor in the next few years. Because we already see, they just announced yesterday that the United States is in front of the hardest recession since the Second World War. They say it yesterday on the news. And a lot of the experts, everybody knows it. I actually say to some of you, and you can check it on a video from my lectures in my website from 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I already told people the first thing will fall down here is real estate. Not that I'm a prophet or something, not that the Torah told me, or not that God came to me in a dream or anything like that. Just common sense, looking at what happened, the balloon and all the nonsense that went around, I just thought to myself, this balloon has to explode. How long are you going to blow it in? And it has to explode. And when it explodes, it's going to be faster than when people can imagine. So now all these people who celebrated real estate, all stuck with buildings, they stuck in new construction, the banks closed their door. They cannot get any loans. Nobody can make money now. Offices are closed. People cannot pay their mortgages in this country.
This country lose more than $1 billion every day in Iraq. Look at the level of the new leaders. Where are they? What's the future of this country? And what's the worst part? That the more it gets bad here, who's going to be the first one to pay the price, as usual? The Jews, always the Jews. The Jews are the first one to benefit when things become good financially. The Jews are the first one to get hurt when things become bad. You will wait and see. Now this is recorded, we are in February, what, 2008? I doubt that if by 2009 we'll be able to walk with yarmulkes here, in a year from now. You wait and see, just a chain reaction. You know, when the goyim don't have money, and the owners of everything are the Jews, that kills them. That's always, it's history. I'm not making anything new here. I'm just checking what happened in all the other times when there were reception, when there was problems in Germany. Who brought Hitler to power? The German... Huh? You wear a baseball hat. And you make one of the tooth gold. And you speak Russian, what do you want? The Bukharians are safe. I have a problem. Everybody knows. Come on, you know, you see your accent is Israeli, you know, I have a problem. Don't worry, you say Spasiva, Chorasho. They love Russians, no? It's Amalek. Amalek and Amalek. The Americans and the Russian came from Esav, you know. Not the Bukharian. Just Bukharian know their language, don't worry. Huh? I never had a schut. But anyway, that's reality. Yeah, maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it won't happen in a year. It could happen in 3-5 years, but it's very close, very close. And everything is bad already. We see. We see what's going on right now already. You know, not there's not one dot of light here. You know, you look at the energy bills. You look at the gas bills. People have to pay $20-$30 to get the work. They pay them $70 a day. By the time they buy lunch, by the time they get back home, they have a flat tire here and there, they work just to maintain the car. How long it's going to go? And so how did they live until now? They borrowed and borrowed and borrowed and borrowed and borrowed. What happened? It's only an illusion. The average American family owe more than $70,000 to the creditors. You think they can ever pay it? So what's the solution? They're trying to make the interest rate lower that the people can borrow new money. Yeah. You understand? You know what it's like? I'll give you an example. Let's say Reuven, Shimon owe him money. Reuven gave money to Shimon. So Shimon owe him money. Now he pays him every month something. Now he sees that he cannot make the payments. So what does he say? He says, okay, let me lend you more money that you can pay me. That's what it is. That's what's happening now. So in a short period of time, it's going to help a little bit to keep us in the illusion a little bit further. But when it collapses, you wait and see what's going to be here. You know what happened in Argentina 10 years ago approximately? Who heard the news? You know or not? Argentina was one of the strongest country financially. Also like here. Everybody rich, nice houses, nice clothes. European country in high standards. One morning, they realize they're bankrupt. They can't pay their bill to the world. The banks are collapsing. So they made a rule. They got an emergency situation. Nobody is allowed to touch his money in the banks. You come to Citibank tomorrow. You come to the ATM. Sorry. Can only withdraw $200 a week. The whole family. That's it. Just to eat. Can't touch your money in Argentina. No, everybody lost their money. Imagine you work, 20 years, you save money, you have money invested, CDs, that, market, it's all frozen, you cannot touch it. Just imagine what's going to be. So everybody here that is clever, if you have some money, keep it for a time of emergencies. It'll be very hard to have money. Don't invest. The Torah always tell you only to invest a third of your money in real estate, a third of your money to do business with, and a third to be for emergency. Look, by the Pele Yoetz, he writes about it. Advice, not everything to be invested. If everything will be invested because you want to make money, you don't want money to stand in a closet, you ended up staying with nothing in the end. Don't worry, keep some money for time of emergencies because you don't really know what's going to be. You don't know, it's going to be very difficult time.
So maybe Hashem is doing it because it's about time that all of us will make Aliyah to Eretz Israel, because the Mashiach is on the way, I hope. But if not, then it's not good news. If yes, then it's a good news. The Gemara says that before Mashiach come, everybody will be broke. Everyone will. Now you may tell me, what are you talking about? There are Jews who have billions here. Billions, not millions. Okay, those who have millions, maybe they become poor. But those who have billions, how can they become poor? They're not going to have a choice. They're going to have to give the money to the people. Why? Because they see all their brothers are dying. What are they going to do? What happened in the time of Beit HaMikdash? There were three billionaires. Kalba Savua, the father-in-law of Rabbi Akiva, Ish Tzitzit HaKesef, that was his name, and Nakdimon Ben Gurion. Three billionaires. And the rest of the Jerusalem people all broke. What happened to the three billionaires? For 3 years, they spend all their money to feed the rest of the nation, the people in Jerusalem, until their money is finished. So what helped them? They save all this money. In the end, there was an ambush around Jerusalem, the Romans. Nobody can come in and out. They had to give all their food and their storages to the people. What are you going to do? You're going to see all your brothers, cousins, everyone die, you let them die? As stingy as you are, in the end you're going to take the money from under the ground. So that's going to be. Let's see what's going to be. Maybe Hashem will make a turn. We do not know the plans of Hashem. He didn't send us an email yet. We don't know. One thing we know to conclude this lecture, because time is up, the reason I brought you all these nice things about the Chachamim, which is not even nothing compared, because you should know that Hashem gave the Chachamim, and that's why we have the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, it's all Chachamim. Everything is Chachamim. Why? Because they are my representative here. I'm not going to come and walk and sentence you and give you advice what to do. You have the Chachamim. And how you become a Chacham? You learn Torah. And you work on your personality. Once you're honest, you're decent, you're straight, you're knowledgeable, you're a good human being, you become a big Chacham. The more you become a Chacham, you sit in Sanhedrin. You're one of the 71 Chachamim. You make laws. And you have even the power, like I told you, to interfere with God's direct laws. For those who came late, they missed that part. I gave an example. I have hundreds of examples, hundreds. I have a whole thing that I wrote, copying from all the sources, that how the Chachamim had the power to interfere with direct orders of Hashem. How much direct orders? To protect us from not making sins, or to... basically, to change mamash de halacha, that Hashem said is not allowed, the Chachamim say it's allowed, or the other way around. How to believe? Why? Because that's what the generation needed at that time. Same thing, you know that the Torah, the oral Torah was not allowed to be written. One day Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi say, allowed, not allowed. If you don't write it today, in 1 year from now, nobody will have it. We all go to the exile, we're going to lose it. So what's better? So he wrote it down. Thanks to him, we have Torah. Without it, we wouldn't have Torah. Remember, the Torah, when people tell you Torah, when you hear Torah, it's not the written Torah. The written Torah, it's just a dot from Judaism. It's all the oral Torah. Everything is oral Torah. All the laws is oral Torah. Chas v'shalom, God forbid. If there was a decree by the Goyim, you have to give up one of the two, the written and the oral, and we have no choice. What would we have to give, chas v'shalom? The written. Why? Because even without it, we would know what to do. We still know how to put tefillin. We would still know how to do things. We would know it. And we had decrees like this. By the time of the Romans, we couldn't touch the Torah. That's why we read Haftarah, as a memory. So we still know what to do. But if we only have the written Torah, and after 200-300 years, we're not going to be able to keep the oral Torah and to keep the laws. Well, after 300 years, we're only going to know the history. Somebody that will be born in 300 years will read, there's a mitzvah to circumcise a boy. He won't know where to circumcise. It doesn't say in a book. He won't know all the laws, how to do, when to do, at night, in a day. He won't know. He won't know all these laws that we have today. None of it is in the Torah. Went from father to son, continuation, like by the Goyim. They're also going to celebrate Christmas next year. And the turkey.
next year and whatever they have. It's always going to be. Always going to be. Any questions before we finish? I know there's one angel that his name is Chashmal. You read in a Kabbalah, there's an angel that his name is electricity. Yeah. I don't know, I never saw a source of speaking about it. But, right, so we can check into it. I know there's the telephone, it's in Tehillim, telephone. Bechol ha'aretz yatza kavam, ubekze tevel milehem. And all the earth lines went through, and the words were heard in the other side. That's a nevuah of David HaMelech about Tehillim. There's many interesting things about that you can take and learn. For instance, it says, "Chitzav kegibor maskil lo yashuv rekam," that they describe in the Navi a war against Babel. Babel, it's Iraq, right there. And it says that the missiles, the Malbim, I told you before, he lived 130 years ago, way before the World War, right? Or before the Gulf War, or the last war, or the war now against Iraq, Saddam, way before. So it says over there, the Malbim. When the Malbim wrote it, the best you had in the world was a gun that you take a horn full of powder, dynamite. You put few pieces of powder inside the gun. You shoot one bullet. That was in his time, 130 years ago. So now the Malbim wrote about this pasuk, Chitzav kegibor maskil lo yashuv rekam. The arrows of the enemies will have a brain, sechel, intelligence, and they will find the target on their own. You shoot, and they'll know how to go to the target. What is it? The missiles that they have today. All the missiles, all the planes, all the war, the tanks, it all goes either infrared or it goes by the radar. How did he know? He translated the pasuk from the Navi, Chitzav. Kegibor maskil, intelligent hero. That's the name of the arrows inside the Navi, the prophet. There's many things, you know. But the most important thing, we are tired of getting proofs. It's about time to move to actions. How many proofs? Proofs, proofs, proofs. Proofs. We have sacks on our back full of proofs. What are you going to do with the proofs? That's the question. Are we going to be serious? Are we going to make changes? Are we going to work on our stinginess, about our jealousy, about our laziness, about our anger? Look at the people today. Every 2-3 sentences, a scream, a yell, a curse. What's going on here? Lions around you. Afraid to talk. Either your boss, your workers. You want to ask him by mistake maybe to put another nail by the sheet rack. And maybe he's going to kill you. You take someone's parking, you're risking your life. Especially in Israel. Yeah, what's going on today? There's not that much time left. Everything shows. The last Chachamim that we have are all of them 90 years old and older. The next shift of the Chachamim are nothing compared to the old one. We have some Ashkenazi rabbis, 89, 87, 90, 95. They're all, Baruch Hashem, with one foot already in Olam Haba, in heaven. What happened after they leave us? What's the next generation? There's nothing compared to them. The next ones who will take their place are not in their level. How many Chachamim we have? How many Sephardim Chachamim we have left in the world that are in a level to guide the entire generation with critical decision in a time of problem? How many? One. That's it. 89 years old.
What
then? Rav Ovadia Yosef. The last souvenir from the Chachamim. We had Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul that left us. Everybody that comes after him, nothing to compare. All with their respect. I mean, we nothing compared to them, but... You know, I'm not here to compare between. I hope there's some hidden ones that we don't know of. Maybe they come out of nowhere and they say, "Hey, here we are." I hope. Or maybe, I'm not sure if I hope or not. Why? Because the Gemara says that when the Chachamim will finish, Mashiach will come. Why? There's nobody to lead the generation anymore. Maybe Ben David will come. And Ben David ba ela bedor shekol haChachamim kalubo. Finished. No Chachamim anymore. One of the things the Gemara says that in a generation of Mashiach, a woman will bring a chicken into the yeshiva. And she comes to all the rabbis that see it. Rabbi, it's kosher, it's kosher, it's kosher, nobody will know. I'm not sure. Ask him. Okay, let me call my rabbi. Nobody will know. I think we're already in this situation already. It's hard questions that nobody really knows what to do. We are there. If Hashem doesn't send us Mashiach, how long will he expect us to go? You understand? On the other hand, I'm sure that Hashem is delaying it. Maybe another 100 Jews will join the train. Maybe another 1,000, because there are Jews who are becoming religious. Bezrat Hashem, in 2-3 weeks, I'm going to come up with a new movie. Yeah, you know, it's been a few years since the Divine Information movie. It's going to be, hopefully, more than 3 hours. It's going to be a long movie, which will include all the proofs, much more than the first one, and it will include a lot of hard words in the end. Trying to wake up everybody who will watch it. So I, until now, I was hesitating, I was afraid, but I saw that the Satan is fighting against this movie for 6 months. Everything goes wrong, everything. Mamash, a miracle. Everything goes wrong, even simple things. He needs the machine comes, but instead of coming to the United States, it goes to Spain by mistake. They put it on the wrong plane, and from Spain they send it here. By the time he gets it, something broke inside, because I guess they throw it. It's a special computer to edit movies. Mamash, unbelievable. Baruch Hashem, we're fighting against the Satan. We got to a point, we started. Baruch Hashem. So why I'm a little encouraged today? Because finally the guy called me and say, I finally now, because I'm editing the movie, I finally saw it from the beginning to the end, I tell you, and he's religious from birth. He said, I tell you, I made tshuva today. He told me, and that's before it's edited, just the lectures. I hope maybe it will be the last thing will push us towards Mashiach. Maybe another few thousand Jews will wake up. You never know. We'll hope. It's going to be in Hebrew. But we're going to make English subtitle. Thank you very much. Good night.